a chaste embrace. For all men are brothers who go down this lonely road. But first, Marcus, what's the secret about the mission? It is to rescue the son of Baron Wayman, isn't it?
Yes, no.
Magnus shifted his position, ready to lie down, but he found he was sitting on a sharp spur of jagged rock. Though it was digging into his buttocks, he somehow couldn't be bothered to move to a more comfortable place. He didn't feel quite so tired, and the spinning silver disc no longer held all of his attention. The lean stranger held the whirling sliver of metal closer to Marcus's eyes.
Tell me the secret. Tell it to me.
Better not, big brother. Sacred is that the sun is not the sun. He is a son, someone's son, but not the son of Baron Wayman.
The stranger's patient smile slipped, and for a splinter of a second, Magnus caught sight of another face, like a grotesque mask buried beneath the skin and flesh. The odd eyes, almost black and flecked with silver, widened, showing a rim of scarlet blood around them. He adjusted the smile back in place again.
The son of the one-eyed man, Carter. Yes, I should have guessed. Very stupid of me. But there is still plenty of time to remedy the foolish error. First, I must complete this small piece of business here.
Magnus's butt really hurt, the broken shard of rock probing its way into his flesh. A bizarre thought swam into his mind, that he didn't like this stranger after all, that he wasn't really a friend, that he meant them harm. The dark eyes turned toward him for a moment, but Magnus's expression hadn't altered. Marcus was acting oddly. He had reached up and opened the collar of his dark green livery shirt, running his hand absently up and down his own neck, leaning his head back to look up into the branches of the trees, making the sinews of his neck stand out, the pulse of his carotid artery clearly visible. Magnus glanced overhead, wondering what his brother was finding so interesting, but there was nothing there. When he looked back down again, the stranger had withdrawn something from a little velvet pouch that he wore neatly tucked away around his throat. It glittered with a pale fire and the wisps of moonlight. It was a straight-edged razor with a carved ivory handle. The shaven-headed man cut Marcus's throat with it, ducking slightly to avoid the cascade of arterial blood that gushed out. The crossbow fell from the dying man's lap, catching the trigger, loosing the quarrel. The bolt smacked into a mass of redwood on the far side of the clearing.
Now, Magnus, I will go and arrange a reception for the other invaders who will walk blindly into it.
It was a nightmare. That was the only possible answer. The razor was moving, almost of its own accord, toward his own throat. If it wasn't a nightmare, then this Night Stalker had chilled 9 of Magnus's friends, slit all of their throats, so that the floor of the forest was sodden with rank steaming puddles of fresh-filled blood.
No pain and no gain, eh, Magnus? What goes around, comes around, and all that.
The pain from the stone that he was sitting on was almost unbearable. Magnus's mind had simply gone blank, knowing that he was about to be murdered, but not being able to do anything about it.
Hey, know what?
What is it, Magnus?
I always said I'd catch him up and get to be the oldest. Now I've done it.
Indeed you have.
Straub patted the young man on his dew-damp cheek.
Indeed you have. Very well done.
The cold steel, honed to slice a human hair down its length, touched Magnus's skin.
Ah! We're fucked.
Traitor stopped dead in his tracks at the dreadful cry.
They got around us, and they're killing the Sectmen.
Bill Rainey's face was slack and loose with horror.
Can't take them all out.
Can and has.
Ryan felt the temptation to remind his old leader that he'd warned him about just this possibility, but it was all too late for that. JB dropped to one knee, awkwardly readying the Uzi, trying to steady it one-handed.
Dark Knight means they know that we're coming.
That could mean they know that Dean isn't me. If they know that,
only one way to save my son. Going in alone. Now, the rest of you get back to the Ville.
No way, Ryan.
I'll lose you both, lover.
Ryan looked around the circle. Shock and dismay was on every face at the realization that their plan was in ruins.
There's no choice. I'm going now. Slide in and find Dean, bring him out. See you back at the Ville sometime tomorrow. Don't try to come after me. It'll just fuck up things even more.
Ryan turned on his heel, then paused.
Look, the Brushwooders know we're here. Get the horses if you can. But they're probably already lost. So try and circle around and move fast. Let Rainey and the kid guide you. They know the area.
Take the greatest of care, my dear fellow.
Thanks, Doc. Here, take my rifle with you. It'll only get in the way.
There wasn't anything else to be said. Ryan gave Christy a kiss on the cheek, then turned away. In passing, he couldn't help noticing how Trader seemed to have aged by 10 years in the past 5 minutes at the realization that his fight plan had gone so appallingly wrong. The fog wrapped itself around Ryan as he moved away. Ryan moved low and fast, not worrying much about making noise. The mist and the surrounding trees would combine to muffle and distort any sounds, and there were brushwooders scurrying around him. He had the Sig Sauer still holstered, relying on the Panga drawn in his right hand. If there was to be any killing, it would be well to try to make it silent. The one thing that he had on his side was the knowledge that most of the fighting men from the camp seemed to be out and about in the forest. If he could get back under cover of night and fog and find Dean quickly enough, there was a real hope that they could get away before dawn. He pushed aside the insistent thought that Straub, Ditchdown, and the Brushwooders had somehow found out that Dean wasn't the Baron's son. If they had found out, then he was on a mission to try to retrieve his son's corpse. Ryan was trying to get the local geography clear in his mind as he ran toward the camp. The Brushwooders' settlement was in a narrow bowl, surrounded by steep hills. The only trail to the west out of it wound along a ravine into the unclaimed territory of the Scabbies, only opening up when it reached the treacherous snaking pathway that ran through the golden wasteland of hot springs and geysers and swamps of boiling mud. There was the tiny seed of an idea beginning to germinate at the back of Ryan's mind, but it was still too small to be worth a lot of thought. He was still thinking about the route back to the coast when he walked around a grove of stunted tamarisks straight into one of the Brushwooders. The man was a little above average height, and he had just finished taking a leak against a redwood. He began turning as he laced up his pants.
Seen any of them?
Ryan didn't hesitate. He stepped in close, swinging the Panga in a powerful upward cut, aiming at the Brushwooder's throat. The point struck home just below the man's lower ear, driving through, splintering teeth. The tip of the 18 inches of cold steel ended up in the front of the man's brain. It was a brutally effective killing stroke. The Brushwooder tried to speak, but his mouth was filled with his own blood and broken teeth, the wide blade forcing his head backward. Ryan squeezed the man's lower jaw so that he could withdraw the Panga, but it had become jammed among the upper bones of his skull, and it wouldn't come free.
Fuck!
The man had reached for his own knife, but the lines were down and his fingers open and closed helplessly. Ryan let him fall, releasing the hilt of his Panga, waiting until the residual twitching and thrashing was over. Then he set his combat boot on the corpse's chest and, using both hands, tugged the blood-slicked blade free. Before wiping it on the man's ragged coat, Ryan straightened and looked around him. The fog walls were just as impenetrable. Nothing human was visible, and nobody seemed aware of the instant slaughter of one of their fellows. Yet there was a sense of bustle. Standing completely still and quiet, Ryan could sense that there were people in the forest, all oblivious to his own presence. The feeling Ryan had was of some moving east toward the horses and his invisible companions, and some to the west, back toward the village, which was where he was heading. The moon was waning. The woods became even darker, making the mist denser. Ryan had to slow his pace, fearful of becoming totally lost, missing the Brushwooders' camp altogether. Or blundering blindly along, straight into the middle of a bunch of the hunting men. But there was the smell of wood smoke and roasting meat, overlaying the throat-tight stench of sulfur, leading him along the right trail. The main track was a little way north,